Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, October 28th, 2018. Sam from the future here. It was actually October 5th. Don't know how I got confused. It's just after 2:30 UTC as we're starting this up. I'm Sam Minter and Yvonne Bo is here. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
Now, I want to mention before we get into anything else, for most of this week, it looked like Yvonne was not going to be able to join us. And then his schedule freed up and I was able to do it. But I was looking for a co-host and I sent out whenever I need a co-host, I send out a little email to a list of people who've done it before or who have expressed interest, et cetera, saying, hey, can anybody join me? And, you know, I got a couple responses, but they were all like, no, I can't do it. But the one I should mention is Ed, who's co-hosted the show many times before at this point, at first said, no, sorry, I can't do it. I'm having some surgery and blah, blah, blah. I will still be in the hospital. And I'm like, but then after 24 hours, I had not received any positive responses. So I went to our Curmudgeon's Corner Slack and said, you know, hey, I haven't gotten any responses after 24 hours. Anybody who's interested, please let me know. And Ed messaged at that point and said, you know, I'm still in the hospital, but I'm feeling okay. And I might be able to find a quiet place to do it for like an hour. And I'll ask my surgeon if that's okay. And I'm like, Ed, I really appreciate it. And I was going to take him up on his offer.
We do appreciate that.
But take care of yourself first. You know, it's like you're in the damn hospital, like rest, recover. And Ed is going to be fine from everything I hear from him. It was an elective surgery, not like an emergency or any, not elective. It was planned. It wasn't an emergency surgery, I should say.
Right.
But in any case, hope you're feeling better, Ed. And I would have taken you up on your offer if Yvonne hadn't like at the last minute said, hey, I can do it after all. But I would have felt bad about it, you know?
Yeah, and when he told me there was a surgery, I was just like, my evening dinner wound up being canceled, and so I was just like, oh, okay, well then this makes it freed up. And part of the problem was that I was worried that if I had just a dinner, I wasn't that concerned, but it was just I have a flight that leaves at 6 a.m. And I was just like, look, if I'm going to get late from a dinner and then we start recording like super late, I'm probably, as some of you have heard on this podcast, I might fall asleep if it's that late, you know, which has happened. And so therefore, I just thought that it wasn't a great idea, but I finished it. There was no dinner, so I got something to eat and I was able to make it back to the hotel after work. And so here we are, and substantially earlier than I normally, on my end, it's substantially earlier, not in Sam's end because time zone.
Anyway, so Ed, feel better. Take care of yourself.
Yes, feel better.
And thank you for the offer.
Thank you.
But we'll have you on when you're back up and running and doing everything.
Yes. Although, thank you so much.
Having said that, it's been a while since the last time I was in a hospital for anything. But when you are in the hospital and you're stuck there, like, distractions are actually kind of welcome. You know,
I do agree. But apparently he couldn't do it from his room. I mean, he was going to have to find the place in the hospital. He couldn't. I mean, I'm like.
Or maybe he was worried about like disturbing like his roommate or something. I don't know.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the agenda for today, we are not going to do an all Kavanaugh show this time. We have other topics too.
There's other stuff.
But we can't avoid Kavanaugh entirely. So we are going to do sort of an update on the last week's worth of developments on the Kavanaugh case. However, I'm going to put a big caveat on that, you know, once again, things are rapidly moving as we're recording this. Thursday evening U.S. time as we're recording this, and there's going to be a vote Friday morning and maybe another vote over the weekend, and it's still up in the air on certain senators and what they're going to do. It looked like it was locked in. Anyway, we'll talk about that when we get there, but there may yet be developments between when we record this and when we put it out, so apologies in advance. Aside from the Kavanaugh stuff, though, it's been a while, and it's now getting really close. We're going to talk about the 2018 midterms. We are a month away now, and there's a lot going on that could impact them. So we're going to talk about that. And then finally, There was a big article in the New York Times about Fred Trump and his empire and how he gave money to all his kids, including Donald, and all kinds of things they did to avoid taxes. Both things that Fred Trump did while he was running things, but also very significantly things that the Trump kids, so Donald Trump and involved. His siblings did. They were heavily involved while Fred Trump was alive, but also when he died and they were doing things with his estate, there was also a lot of stuff going on there. So we'll talk about those things. So that's the basic agenda. As usual, though, before we get to that, I have my media consumption section here, and this week it is two movies. Are you excited, Yvonne? Two movies.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm tingling.
So, number one is a movie from 1991. The Neverending Story 2.
Oh, I was going to say, didn't you watch this fucking thing like real? Oh, so, Neverending Story 2.
Yeah, okay. Not The Neverending Story, which I believe I gave a thumb sideways to when I talked about having watched it like last year sometime. I don't know when it exactly was, but because it was sort of it was like it's got a lot of nostalgia and things for people approximately our age, and so people think about it that way. But watching it now as an adult, I was sort of like, okay,
let me be clear. I didn't watch it for then. And I haven't watched it. We talked about it last year. You said that I was supposed to watch it. I can't watch this thing. You know, I can't watch any fucking movies lately. I swear to God, the other day, I'm like trying to scroll through a fucking list of movies. And I'm like, I don't want to watch any of this shit. I don't know what the hell's wrong with me. I used to watch a lot more movies.
Yeah.
Now I'm like fucking scrolling through lists. And I'm like, I don't want to watch any of this shit. I don't watch any of it.
So anyway, The Neverending Story, the original, was... you know, a fun little movie. It did not capture the, you know, full effect of the, you know, when I was a kid watching it, nostalgia, like a lot of people. Anyway, so I gave it a thumb sideways. Neverending Story 2 is complete and utter crap.
Okay. Well,
there are essentially no redeeming qualities whatsoever to the sequel.
So this one, let's forget about thumbs sideways. This one is just double thumbs down.
Yeah, this across thumbs down across the board. It tries to sort of recapture some of the magic of the first one, but it fails utterly. Like, and as I said, I wasn't in retrospect, I'm not as impressed about the magic of the first one. It's just lots of people like it and are nostalgic about it. But the second one, no. It's just they tried, they failed. It was awful. There you go.
No, oh, there you go.
And yes, it is a kid's movie, but I wouldn't even recommend this for your kids. It's just, no. It's not one of these where, you know, the kids will love it, but the adults are bored. No, the kids will hate it too.
Right.
So there you go.
Okay. All right. So Neverending Story 2 basically just sucks.
Yeah. I
all right then.
Yeah, they were just trying to suck some more dollars out of that stone, and anyway.
It's the sequel game, so anyway.
It is the sequel game, but you know, sometimes sequels are actually good.
No, there's a lot of sequels that have been good. It's just that one.
There's some
just,
sequels, you know, that are even better than the original movies. That sometimes happens.
True. This was not the case.
No, it was not. So the second movie was a 2014 movie. Maleficent.
I didn't like that.
saw this one?
Nope. I slept through my wife watching it.
Did she like it?
On TV. I think she did.
Okay.
But I honestly think that after like 10 minutes, all I did was just pass out of sleep and I didn't watch any of it.
I will tell you, I liked Maleficent a lot. So for those of you who don't know, it's Sleeping Beauty. It's the story of Sleeping Beauty, but told from the perspective of the evil witch or evil fairy, right. I guess she is. And so And I guess Angelina Jolie was Maleficent, who's the main
right.
bad character. And it's sort of
how are you pronouncing this?
Maleficent, I think is
correct. Maleficent?
Maleficent.
Yeah, but isn't it still Mela instead of Meli?
Mela, probably. I don't know. Look, you know, I'm bad enough pronouncing real names. When you get to made-up names.
Yeah, this is right. I think it's Maleficent.
Maleficent.
Right.
Okay. Maleficent, same damn thing. I can't even tell the difference between those two words. Come on.
All right, then. All right. Okay.
Okay. So,
okay.
In any case, I actually really enjoy it. It's like Wicked. You know the play Wicked that was based on a book. It's Wizard of Oz told from the witch's perspective.
I've heard of that.
And that was also very interesting. Ages ago, I both saw
the
musical.
A movie?
I don't think there's been a movie yet. There was a musical on Broadway, and there was a book.
There's a musical.
The book came first, and then the musical.
I haven't been to any of it. I
liked Wicked. I liked this one as well, and you definitely get an entirely different perspective on the whole thing, because of course that's what they're intending to do. It's like you turn the story on its side and they're like, what were the motivations of, you know, this evil fairy? Why did she do this? And of course you end up sympathizing with her and she turns out not to be as evil as everyone thinks, you know, et cetera. But I liked it a lot. I thought it was a fun movie. I enjoyed it. It was emotional at the right parts, et cetera. I think they're going to do a sequel to this one. We'll see if it sucks as much as Neverending Story 2. But I liked Maleficent. You know? So.
Okay. Well, I found it very nice and restful to sleep to.
Well, you know, the first 10 minutes were sort of like, it was like one of these where they set things up by showing a lot of the characters in their childhoods and what was going on then. And then an event happens and then they skip forward many decades until they're all adults. And then they go from there. So you probably fell asleep in that beginning segment before they even got to the main part of the movie.
That's accurate. And the thing is, here's the problem with this, right? So when we get time to watch these movies, right, it's usually like on a Friday night
in the evening. You're late. It's late. You're tired.
In the evening. Yeah, and I'm like, look, I mean, I try to stay up for these damn things, but on a Friday after I've had a whole week there, I've been traveling, doing whatever, and like short sleep, whatever, not. I mean, we start watching a movie at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, especially one that isn't like really catching. You know, it's not some action flick that's like catching me or something. I'm done. I'm out.
Yeah. And look, there were more action-y parts later in the movie, but the first 10, 15 minutes were relatively peaceful, let's say. I mean, things were happening became important.
There was this one time that we went to the movies to watch. She wanted to watch. Oh, what the hell? These were the vampires. What the hell the name of the movie? Recent stuff.
The one set in the Pacific Northwest? That one, Twilight?
Yeah, exactly. She took me to see one of the Twilight movies on a Friday night to the movie theater, for God's sakes. Oh, my God, listen. I mean, she woke me up at some point because I was snoring in the damn theater. I mean, I was just flat out. I was just snoring.
I'm sure that was appreciated by everyone around you.
Yeah, yes, I'm sure it was. So she had to shove me and just, you know, could you get up? Thankfully, we were one of these like luxury theaters where they actually have like a bar or something, whatever. I just got up from there and I'm like, let me just go to the bar and have a drink and like hang out here's the thing. I went to sleep and they were getting married. It was still like an hour later I fall asleep. They were still fucking getting married. And I'm like, what the hell happened? I fell asleep, you know, 45 minutes ago. These assholes are getting married. They're still getting married. I mean, I could have gone to the real wedding and it wouldn't have taken this long.
So anyway, whichever of the Twilight movies that was, I'm guessing maybe the third one, because you're talking about them getting married.
I mean, if you want to take a nice nap. Look, if you want something on TV, they'll just lull you to sleep. I'll tell you, that movie will just, man, you're out. Done.
So there were 5 movies in the Twilight series.
Twilight Saga. Didn't they call it the Twilight Saga?
Yes. So it was Twilight, like New Moon, Eclipse, Breaking Dawn Part 1, and Breaking Dawn Part 2.
I can't remember which one it was. Like, what the fuck? It was the one that we're getting married.
Yeah,
there's some wedding in the damn thing.
I am guessing that no matter which one of the 5 movies you saw, you would have roughly the same conclusion with all 5.
I think it would have been the same difference anyway. It didn't matter which one.
Okay, so that's enough for media. I had a thumbs down on Neverending Story 2, thumbs up on Maleficent, and Yvonne has a thumbs down on the entire Twilight Saga.
Yes.
Is that about right?
100%. 100%. Yes.
Okay. Well, with that, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about Kavanaugh and all of the developments that have happened.
Kavanaugh. Right.
Yeah. Close enough. Whatever. We'll be back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Before we start this segment, let me just reiterate what I said in the intro a few minutes ago. We recorded this on Thursday evening U.S. time, and I'm putting this together Saturday afternoon U.S. time, and it will be released sometime Saturday night U.S. time, which means a lot has happened. Specifically on the Kavanaugh situation, since we recorded this, we had the preliminary vote. We had Susan Collins come out in favor of Judge Kavanaugh, and we had the final vote. And in fact, a little bit before the moment I'm recording this right now, Kavanaugh was actually sworn in as a justice on the Supreme Court. So things did, in fact, move quickly. So keep in mind that what you're listening to was recorded before all that happened. Having said that, I think it still holds up pretty well. Here you go. Okay, we are back. When last we left the Kavanaugh saga, we had just... We just did that. Like, right before the break, we played with the pronunciation.
Kavanaugh!
See, now I'm self-conscious about it, and I have no idea what to say. Anyway, when we last left this story, we had just had Senator Flake.
The last thing that happened, right.
The last thing that happened when we discussed this on the show last week was Senator Flake had forced a 1-week pause for an FBI investigation. And on last week's show, we talked a lot about, well, you know, if the FBI investigation comes back with nothing new, won't we just be in the exact same fucking place a week from now? And Yvonne?
I think we're kind of like in the same fucking place as we were last week, because in large part, look, this investigation, I mean, I thought a week wasn't really a lot of time, but take that out of the equation. The fact is that the FBI did not, it doesn't seem like they were given a free hand to do whatever the hell they would have wanted to do to investigate the things thoroughly. They got, it seems, very conflicting instructions. They didn't seem to interview a lot of people
Well, also there's a question of the public instructions versus private instructions. It's exactly. they never put out what the official written guidelines they had to go by were. You had sort of the president pointing at the Senate pointing at the president them all pointing at the FBI. They're wide open, sometimes saying whatever.
Yeah. But what about the things that we know? The things that we know is, for example, they didn't interview, Dr. Ford. Okay. Right. They did not interview one of the guys that was on TV yesterday that I saw was his college roommate.
Right.
They didn't interview what it seemed like a lot of other people that came out that were relevant to this investigation.
Well, and they mentioned in terms of Dr. Ford, one of the things that was said, she had plenty of time to give her story at the thing, at the hearing. We didn't need to talk to her. But the other part of that is probably if they'd interviewed her, they probably would have had to interview Kavanaugh as well. And Kavanaugh certainly did not have the kind of grilling by the Senate that the FBI might have been able to do. So who knows? The reports are, now that the report has gone to the Senate, although it's secret, nobody else can see it but the senators and a couple staff members, is that they requested interviews from 10 people and actually interviewed 9. And the report is basically the transcripts of those 9 interviews, and that's it. And the 9 interviews were
that really isn't a lot.
Those nine people were very specifically tailored to be a specific group of people who was surrounding the allegations of the first and second woman. Mostly the first, a little bit of the second, but not much beyond that. And there was a very, very conscious effort, it seems, to only be people where they could ask, did you see this happen? So there was no, were you at the house when this party happened? And do you remember the boys going upstairs with the girl or whatever? There was none of the follow-up on, is he lying about being a drunk? Is he... any of this kind of stuff. It was very narrowly tailored. And so you've had all kinds of people complaining all week long that they've got relevant information that they were trying to give to the FBI, and the FBI was basically blowing them off.
Right. So.
And the thing is, this is what I was trying to get at last week. A, this is just interviews in the transcripts. The FBI isn't doing any analysis. And B, what the investigation was going to be defined by the White House. And so it seemed highly likely to me last week that where we would end up is, nothing substantial new coming out of the FBI investigation. And I think that's exactly where we ended up. Now, the Republican argument at this time is, I think it's been a very thorough investigation and there's no exculpatory evidence. We haven't learned anything new and there's nothing here that proves Kavanaugh did it. The Democratic argument is, okay, yeah, but you didn't ask these people or these people or these people, and you didn't look into whether or not he was lying to the committee last week, and you didn't look into this and you didn't look into that. And so this is worthless. This is a whitewash, And where we end up is we have, everybody's still on their partisan lines and we still have the same few people in the middle who haven't officially declared their position yet. I guess one of the red state Democrats declared their position and said they will vote no. But otherwise, we have we still don't know what Flake is doing. We still don't know what Collins is doing. We still don't know what Murkowski is doing, and we still don't know Munchen. It's not Mnuchin. It's
Manchin.
Manchin. There you go.
Manchin.
We still don't know what those four senators are doing as of when we're recording this on Thursday evening. By the time you guys listen to this, you will know how those people voted at least on the first round.
Today, many people were declaring that they knew. They knew what they were voting based on the statements that they did.
Yeah,
when I saw the statements, I actually posted this on our Slack, and I said, "I'm sorry." I looked at the statements; they were very vague. Yes, I mean the statement is, "Well, I'm going to read the information later." Well. We have gotten what we asked for. Stuff like that.
Right.
It's not like they said, oh, yeah, this, you know, changed my mind. They just said that, okay, they did what I asked them to do. That was about it. And so I was like, look, I know that I have given the odds on Kavanaugh being confirmed the whole way. But what I was saying about them is like, look, I don't think I got anything out of those statements that made me change how I was handicapping it. They didn't say a damn thing in the statement.
There was enough around. I gave it in the morning, based on what I'd heard so far in the morning. I was putting it at 95% Kavanaugh confirmed. After all the uncertainty that's come out through the day, I dropped that to an 80. I still think.
Well, I gave it an 80 before, and I still gave it an 80 afterwards.
Okay.
All right. That was my number. Okay. I just didn't move. Because the statements were like, I think if I remember the statement by Flake was something like, I think it was Collins. It was one of the female senators said, I'm going to go sit down and review it. And people were saying, what? They made up their mind. I'm
like, well, no,
they said she's going to sit down and review it. What the how the hell is she making up her mind?
The thing that made people say that was the sort of unanimous drumbeat that there's nothing new, there's nothing new, there's nothing new. And then Collins was saying something along the lines of, it looks like a very thorough investigation. And Flake said something very similar in terms of that. Yeah.
I'm sorry. It looks like a thorough investigation. It's not saying, well, this definitely, before.
Well, the thing is, the reason why it being thorough led people in that direction is because the main criticism coming from the Democrats at that time was specifically that it wasn't thorough, that it intentionally ignored certain things.
But here's the thing, right? Correct. But here's the problem. We don't know what the content of this fucking report is. And let's be blunt. It's not like even like anybody has that much of a view. I was looking at the rules of how to read this report. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So for whatever the hell damn reason, I still don't understand why this shouldn't be public. Because I think it should be. I don't really understand why, but that's number one.
It's because the Republicans don't want it to be.
There's 109 people who have clearance to access what was delivered to Capitol Hill. 100 senators, 4 majority committee staffers, 4 minority committee staffers, and 1 committee clerk. There's one copy of this thing. One copy, okay? It's in a vault, okay? Senators can't bring their phones. Okay, they can't bring anything in there to take notes.
No, they can take notes, but then they can't leave with the notes. The notes have to stay.
Right. If they take notes, the notes must be left in the room.
Right.
So what the hell? So they can't take notes with them out of the damn room. Okay. They're not allowed to discuss or characterize in detail what they've read.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, this is and the amount of time they've got. They have like to rotate. The Republican staffers got to look at 8 a.m. for it. Then at 9 a.m., the Democrats control the room. And then control the room is scheduled to rotate every hour for the rest of the day of Thursday. I mean, I'm sorry. There's supposed to be 100 people looking at this one copy of this report. One fucking copy. How the fuck are they supposed to read this with that little time?
Apparently part of what they were doing,
somebody was reading it out loud.
No, part of what they were doing was, in fact, they split up parts of the document. So there were little groups of senators that would say, okay, well, this group is going to take this bit. This group is going to take that bit. And then, yes, they would read it out loud. One senator would read it out loud to the others.
Do you know how ludicrous this is?
Well, they also had some
briefing. What year is this again?
Yes.
What year is this again?
1832.
Oh, okay. Apparently.
Yeah.
Good God.
Those restrictions as listed are idiotic. I mean, at the worst, like, okay, have them in the locked, secure room that you can't leave, but have 100 copies so that the senator can go grab their own copy, sit down in a chair, good read God. It, and then leave. You know?
Right.
Did the printer break? You know?
Right.
Come on. I mean, this kind of stuff is absolutely ridiculous. You can
RFID every fucking page, for God's sakes, to make sure it doesn't get out.
Yeah. There are all kinds of things you could do there.
There are all kinds of things you could do to make sure that the fucking document doesn't leave the goddamn room. I mean, you could understand why the elders only one copy. I mean, it was just made on purpose to make this more obtuse and difficult to do your job. I mean, it's just the whole damn process just seemed to be hell-bent on not really giving you any information.
Right. And so a number of them have read it. Others Manchin, as we mentioned before, is one of the undecided ones, said he didn't get a chance to finish it. So he's going back tomorrow to read more before the vote.
Yeah. Well, how the fuck could he have? That's what I'm saying.
And so, yeah. Now the universal thing that seemingly both Republicans and Democrats agree though, is it basically, aside from a few little details here and there, there's nothing substantially new that had not been out there in previous testimony or in the press prior to this investigation. So it's just...
Okay, so the question is whether you believed what was read before and whether this validated, if it gave you, you know, the information, whether it validated that. I mean...
Right. And again, the question is the big holes, like, you know, what about the people they didn't talk to? What about the leads they didn't check, you know?
But here's one thing. During the week that has been out there, there's been a lot of other information outside the FBI report that has come public. Okay. There's been a lot of people that know Brett Kavanaugh that have testified that,
well,
I mean,
let's not use the word testify because they weren't
that have, okay, correct, but they didn't testify, that have made public statements saying that basically directly stating that Brett Kavanaugh flat out lied in the hearings. Okay. Right. All right. That's one thing that we know.
Although a bunch of people came out today though and said that the Devil's Triangle really was a drinking game. That they made up.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Well, a kid from a couple years earlier in their school said that I invented the drinking game. Here are the rules. And several other people signed statements to the same effect that they'd played this drinking game.
But that irrelevant. There's a lot of, okay, fine. That was one thing he didn't lie about.
I mean, there's another group that still disputes that, by the way, and says that they also heard Kavanaugh using that term in reference to the sex act as well.
I mean, his college roommate, freshman year, said on CNN last night, flat out, that it was referring to a sex act.
Right.
Okay. And that he heard him say it in direct reference to a sex act.
Yes.
So, you know, so whatever. So the reality is that if you look at almost anybody who has come public during this week, there's been so many people that have come out just flat out, countering so much of what he testified as just flat out being untrue.
Right.
And now, if you close your – I mean, the only way you could have not considered that is if you close your ears and just said, well, it's not lying. So – but let's be clear. I think it is very clear to anybody who's an objective observer that he lied testifying.
Well, and okay. so part of – I've read several things about, well, you know, everybody actually knows that he's lying. The – issue is whether people think it matters, you know, whereas, you know, that sort of it's a lie, but it's a lie in service of a greater truth or a greater cause, you know, and that, you know, they shouldn't be asking him about this stuff anyway. So, of course, he's going to do a little white lie. But, of course, I want to take those people because any of them who are old enough, you know, they were saying the exact opposite of thing about Bill Clinton and his lies. You know,
of course, or yeah. anybody else for that matter, who wasn't a Republican.
Right. Because it's the exact same argument. And the fact that Kavanaugh was involved in the Starr investigation just is
makes it even worse.
Yeah. I mean, because it's like you're making the argument, oh, he lied about the, you know, how much he drank. Why does that matter? Because it's not really relevant to the thing at hand. Well, you know, Bill Clinton's goddamn blowjob was irrelevant to the thing at hand.
Totally too. Irrelevant. Right. Exactly.
You know,
completely irrelevant.
It's the same damn thing. And so if you're going with the line, which I agreed with in the Clinton case, and I agree with here, that, you know, there, the lying is itself a problem, regardless of what it's about, you know.
The lying is itself a problem. The question is, for example, you know, whether when we're talking about the lying, he was positioning himself for a job that is a lifetime position, mm-hmm. okay, in the highest court of the land. And he lied and repeatedly lied about
all sorts
so
of
much
things.
Stuff, okay, while testifying, that it's just – I'm just like, how could you just say that this doesn't matter?
Well, and you have all these Republicans saying things like, and now they're talking about whether or not he got into a bar fight, and they're asking about his drinking habits in high school, and blah blah blah. Is that really relevant? And I'm like, well, you know, not directly, you know, but the fact that he's lying about it is
actually yes, directly. Actually, I'm sorry to tell you, but I do think directly it is relevant. Look, I said this, and actually I was talking to my brother, look, who both of us drank quite a lot in college. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's just, and we partied a lot. Look, the level of obnoxiousness and assholishness of these yes. guys is yeah. one of the ones that I always found despicable, of people that I never wanted to associate myself with, people who I never wanted in any position of any significant power.
Because you're like, they're fucking assholes. Way,
yes! There is no way on God's green earth that I would want such a fucking asshole to be in the Supreme Court. It's just, the man has no morality. The man had no morality then. And don't fucking tell me that's how kids behave. Fuck that shit. Look, my best friends at school, all of them didn't do any of the shit he's talking about. Nothing. 10 times smarter than this motherfucker. I don't want to hear that, oh, well, everybody just does that kind of shit at school. No, no, no. You know what? I don't know anybody that was a friend of mine that was going up to women and like fucking like throwing them on a bed, fucking covering their mouth and trying to fucking like force themselves on top of them like that when they were like trying to shove them off. No. No.
But see, here's the thing, Yvonne. You got to remember, we're talking about the Republican Party that has lined up directly behind Donald Trump. So they clearly don't have a problem.
Don't give a fuck.
They don't have a problem with sexual abuse of any sort, nope. sexual harassment of any sort. They don't have a problem with nope. lying, clearly.
Nope.
You know, nope. So why would this be any different? I mean, they've, you know, in terms of Donald Trump.
Because even still at this moment, I cannot believe. Look, I think this is why Jeff Flake is having such a conflict about this. He's actually said it already multiple times. Yes, I know that these guys want their conservative ideals, the ones that they're talking about. Well, I want somebody who is for like small government and free trade and, you know, that kind of stuff. But
yeah, just like
God,
Donald Trump.
Are you? Right. Well, whatever. Yeah. Not him. But so he believes that this guy is for that. And I actually do believe that this guy is for that.
Yeah.
I do
unlike
agree
Donald Trump.
That this guy. Right. Unlike Donald Trump, that Brett Kavanaugh is really for those things. I do agree with him. OK. But should that really trump any, no pun intended, any fucking moral judgment, especially at a position. Look, you're not putting this guy in for 4 years that you can vote that then he's going to go out. This guy has taken a lifetime appointment. I'm sorry, but you know what? I don't think that the partying that I did, even though I didn't do anything remotely like Brett Kavanaugh, and the shit that I've done qualifies me to be on the Supreme Court. Okay? I would rather have had my friends that were very smart who didn't do any of that shit that I know had better judgment about this crap be on the fucking Supreme Court before I was. And I can recognize that. Why the hell can't these motherfuckers recognize that that's the kind of people that you want there? That maybe we have foibles that we should not. We should try to aspire to be better in the fucking court.
Well, and the thing here is, and they're running out of time now, but, you know, again, if Donald Trump had just dumped this guy 3 weeks ago, we would already be well into process of looking at somebody else.
The other guy. Yes, absolutely.
But, you know, there are a couple things there. One, you know, Donald Trump liked this guy not just for his normal conservative views, but more so than most of the other people on the list of 25. He's been very vocal about executive power issues and how you shouldn't be bothering the president with legal concerns during the presidency, et cetera, et cetera. He's that kind of thing. Apparently, there's the Supreme Court goes back into session this week, I believe. And there's apparently at least one case that's coming up in the first month or so that is about double jeopardy in the case where somebody is charged both federally and by the states that might be relevant for Donald Trump, that they would like somebody on the court in time for, you know? Maybe there are some reasons, but it seems like, you know, again, like any normal Republican president would have dumped this guy after the first week when they realized all this stuff. But
you know what the worst thing is? The craziest thing about this is that the only thing that I did hear this week that Trump was having reservations is the fact that he was so fucking like talked about his drinking. And because Trump doesn't drink.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, and Trump didn't drink because his brother died, you know, basically a heavy drinker.
Right.
And I know that all of a sudden he was having second thoughts about this whole damn thing because, I mean, this guy, I mean, my God, when he went on about how he liked beer, good God almighty.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, I mean, my brother was like, you know, I said, my brother called me up. We were talking about this. He said, you know, I like wine, but Jesus Christ, I don't think I'd ever say that I'd like wine that much in fucking testimony in Congress. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing I was saying, why didn't he dump him and come up with somebody new? I mean, the other more fundamental thing that, you know, a normal administration would have done is they would have vetted him a lot more closely probably and discovered some of these problems beforehand and never nominated him in the first place.
But these guys haven't vetted anybody thoroughly in the first place.
Yeah. This administration is not known for that.
Yes.
They have hired lots of problematic people and don't care.
Yep.
And that's part part of this approach to it is, you know, shoving it down their throats. And also like the Republican Party, like all the elected Republicans and a whole bunch of people in the base seemingly got really super excited after Kavanaugh's testimony when he was all belligerent and stuff. They loved that. They thought that was great.
I mean, that's just. And then today, apparently, he wrote an op-ed in which he was apologizing for being so stern.
He said, "Maybe I went a little bit too far."
You think?
And I promise that if I'm on the court, I will be the well-tempered, blah blah blah, whatever. I don't know what words he used, but basically said, "I'll be the judge you saw before that, not the one you saw at that hearing."
Right. Not the guy that apparently was drunk from the night before still a little bit and like was going like went off script completely.
Now we don't know that.
That's my claim. They should have asked him. Did you have a few drinks last night? Did you drink before you got here? You have a few beers. I love beer.
When was you the really last time beer. You had a beer? Yeah.
Exactly.
So anyway, let's talk a little bit. I think those were most of the events. So now, as we are recording this, we still have those four senators who haven't said what they're going to do, and they seem to honestly really be going back and forth. Manchin,
I would love, can I just say,
yeah.
I said this on our feed, I would love for one thing to happen. If the vote comes down to Flake, okay, in honor of McCain's passing, mm-hmm. I wish he would go just pull a McCain.
Do it the exact same way. Don't tell anybody before the vote and just walk up and put his thumbs down.
Yes. That would be...
I would love that. I think that would be great if like Collins or somebody did that too. It doesn't have to be Flake.
Right.
But if it comes down to that, I'm one vote.
Flake was Arizona. He knew McCain pretty well.
Yeah.
I figured that, you know. So...
But yeah, that would be interesting. But and if that happens, you will probably know it before the show comes out, because the test vote on the procedural issue is Friday morning, and there's pretty much no way in hell I'll get the show out before then. So, you know, and of course, it is possible that the procedural vote and the final vote will go differently, but which is what happened with the ACA. Right.
Which is what happened with the ACA. Exactly.
Because McCain voted for the procedural vote and then thumbs down on the final vote.
And then thumbs down. Correct.
So anyway, I don't know. I mean, we both gave our odds. We're both at about 80% chance.
I think 80% is the odds that he gets confirmed. Like right now.
So that's my now 20% is not nothing.
It's not nothing, but you know, it's highly favorable.
You know, and these some of these senators, like, you know, we've been hearing reports for the last few hours of like Murkowski having all sorts of people visiting her that flew from Alaska specifically for the purpose of talking to her and trying to convince her to vote no. And we've got demonstrations in front of Collins' office, and Flake reports that Flake is still conflicted, and Manchin, who's left, I guess Heitkamp said that she's voting no, which is, you know, she's in a red state, and that's likely to hurt her in the red state and may well lose the Democrats that Senate seat. Manchin is in the same kind of position where voting no may lose him his Senate seat. Which, of course, if the Democrats want to keep the Senate, that's a whole other thing, and we'll talk about that in the next segment. But he seems to very much be waiting to see what everybody else does, because he wants to vote in a group with other people. He does not want to be in a position where this is on
him. He doesn't want to be the deciding. Exactly. He doesn't want to be the deciding vote. Yeah, which I understand. But Heitkamp, look. Heitkamp is behind on her, and we'll talk about that later. She's just like, I don't care. I can't vote for this asshole. It doesn't matter. I think they had a quote from her brother saying, look, she said she can't look, you know, the quote was something like, she wants to brush her teeth in the morning and be able to look at herself in the mirror.
Right.
That's
So we'll see. I mean, we've got a bunch of these senators who are at the last minute, still going like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And the smart bet, which is why we're all at 80%, is they'll go true to form and stick with their party. But they might not. And
they might not. And it's happened before. So that's why it's not 100%.
And I'll insert an update from the future on what happened.
In the year 2000. Actually, year 2000 is not the future anymore. It's not. It is way, way past. We're way past.
Anyway, here's the update on what happened. The final vote was 50 yays to confirm Kavanaugh, including Senator Manchin, the Democratic senator. 48 nays. Senator Murkowski, who was going to vote no, ended up voting present, so that Senator Daines, who was going to be a yes vote, could attend his daughter's wedding. So 50 yays, 48 nays, 2 not voting was the final vote. And Judge Kavanaugh is now Justice Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court. Okay, and we're back. And with that, I think we're done with Kavanaugh. Are we done with Kavanaugh?
Done.
Okay, we're going to take a break. And we will come back and talk about the midterms, the 2018 midterms, how Kavanaugh affects that, and how everything else in the universe affects that. We will be back after this.
Hello, this is Aditi. I'm here to let you know about Sam the Curmudgeon's other podcasts, the Wiki of the Day podcasts. Wiki of the Day comes in three varieties: popular, random, and featured. Each highlights a new Wikipedia article each day. They just pick the articles differently. This week on Popular Wiki of the Day, you would have heard the summary for A Star is Born, 2018 film. A Star is Born is a 2018 American musical romantic drama film produced and directed by Bradley Cooper, in his directorial debut. Cooper wrote the screenplay with Will Fetters and Eric Roth. A remake of the 1937 film of the same name, it stars Cooper, Lady Gaga, Andrew Dice Clay, Dave Chappelle, and Sam Elliott, and follows a hard-drinking musician, Cooper, who discovers and falls in love with a young singer, Gaga. It marks the third American remake of the original 1937 film, which featured Janet Gaynor and Frederick March, which was adapted into a 1954 musical, starring Judy Garland and James Mason, and then remade as a 1976 rock musical with Barbara Streisand and Kris Kristofferson. Talks of a third A Star is Born remake began in 2011 with Clint Eastwood attached to direct and Beyoncé set to star. The film languished in development hell for several years with various actors approached to co-star, including Christian Bale, Leonardo DiCaprio, Will Smith, and Tom Cruise. In March 2016, Cooper signed on to star and direct, and Lady Gaga joined the cast in August 2016. Principal photography began at the Coachella Music Festival in April 2017. A Star is Born premiered at the 75th Venice International Film Festival on August 31, 2018, and was released in the United States on October 5, 2018. By Warner Brothers, the film received critical acclaim, with praise for Cooper and Gaga's performances, Cooper's direction, the cinematography, and the music. That's all there is to it. See? Fun, entertaining, educational, and short. Okay, now look for and subscribe to the Wiki of the Day family of podcasts on your podcast playing software of choice, or just go to wikioftheday.com to check out our archives. Now back to Curmudgeon's Corner.
Okay, we are back. So, election 2018. And before we get into 2018 proper, I will just gripe a little bit too. I'm supposed to be getting election graphs ready for the 2020 race, and my targeted launch day is the date after the midterms, and I've done jack shit yet. I've had the last 2 years, and I've basically blown it off in favor of other things for most of those 2 years, and now I've got 1 month, and I have a shitload of stuff to do and nowhere near enough time to do it. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I have to make time, but I'm annoyed at myself because I've procrastinated and done other things. And I mean, I've done other things that I enjoyed doing, but oh man, I haven't got anything ready and I need to get it ready. And I've got a month. Damn it.
You slacker.
I know.
Slacker. Come on.
So aside from 2020, which I will talk about if and when I get that set up. 2018. Now, I know I've brought up the Real Clear Politics polling pages. Yvonne has the 538 information, but I will start actually with the basic 538 summary, and I'm not going to give the exact numbers, but the overall state of the race.
Wait, you're going to do the 538? You're going to do the 538 one?
Well, I'm just going to give a very high level there. Because the bottom line is that the state of what's going on for the House is almost exactly opposite what is going on for the Senate, which is that
correct
for the House, there's a 70% chance that the Democrats take it and a 30% chance that the Republicans keep it. For the Senate, there's a 70% chance that the Republicans keep it and a 30% chance that the Democrats take it.
Correct.
Roughly. I'm rounding.
Yeah.
But what's really fascinating to me is that they're almost exact mirror images of each other.
They are. But the one thing is that if you really, I mean,
and one more thing I want to say, though. And this has got to do with how everybody misinterprets odds. And it's just like we were talking about in 2016. 70-30 or 30-70, whichever you want to take it. Yes, one side has an advantage, but the other side's chances are still actually pretty good.
Yes.
You know, 70-30,
yes,
if somebody's got a 70% chance of winning, that's not 100%.
That's not guaranteed.
That's not guaranteed at all. And if you've got a 30% chance of winning, that doesn't mean you're not going to, you know? And so right. When you're talking about a 70-30 split, for all practical purposes, that's still too close to call. One side has a little bit of an advantage, but it still could go either way easily. And that
is something
that everybody should keep in mind when looking at these. When everybody's talking about the blue wave for the House, or how, you know, the Republicans even have to worry about the Senate or blah, 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 whatever. You know, all of this is within the realm of anything could happen.
So one of the conversations that I've been having about where these odds are is that a lot of people are saying for some reason that this whole Kavanaugh thing
has energized the Republicans.
Republicans, right. Because in some polling, it came out that registered Republicans, their level of enthusiasm had gone up.
Right.
Okay. All right. A lot.
They had been way behind the Democrats. And after all this, they are now tied with the Democrats for their enthusiasm, for how important they think.
In enthusiasm.
Yeah.
But the enthusiasm polls are fucking bullshit, because here's the biggest problem about that.
Okay.
There's a lot more registered Democrats than there are Republicans. Number two, the number of registered Republicans has been shrinking dramatically over the last number of years. Mm. So what the fuck does it matter that I've got more enthusiasm amongst registered Republicans when the number of those people went down? That information is just some of the most useless horseshit polling
I've ever seen in my life. At least if you don't put those things together. Like, if you put those things together and say, is the increase in enthusiasm enough to offset the loss in numbers?
Exactly. And I'm like, the answer is no. There isn't. If you look at the chart that shows the number, how much the number of registered Republicans has shrunk, that enthusiasm, where it only matches what the hell the Democrats are, doesn't make up for the decay in numbers. So I saw those polls and I'm just like, oh, come on. What the fuck is this? Look, if you still look at the other polling, which is the generic, the congressional ballot, if you look at the actual polling data of the races, none of that shit changed with any of that crap about people being more enthusiastic. Although
the one thing I'll say on that, though, is that House polling races are sparse enough, not the generic ballot per se, which actually has shown the Democratic advantage declining a little bit in the last few weeks, but the individual House races are really sparsely polled, so you probably wouldn't see anything there yet. And where they really...
But still, look, even with the decline in that, we're still in the same range where it happened, where the odds as you mentioned. It's 538 has it at 74% chance of the Democrats taking the House. Okay. And the Senate hasn't budged, where it's, you know, it's a 2-9 for the Democrats and a 7-9 for the Republicans. In large part because for the Senate, as we talked about, there's only 35 seats up for election,
right.
Okay, out of the 100.
And so
it's a very small number.
And the number of seats, well, it's a third of the Senate as it usually is, but it's loaded towards an advantage to the Republicans.
Well, not really. Out of the 35 seats up for election, 75% are slated to be Democratic. Out of those, at least that. The thing is that the number of that are in contention, right? Mm-hmm. Because the margin is so thin. It's only about, if you look at the ones that are leaning R or toss up, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 seats, okay? And even when you get down to those, The reality is, how many of those are really in dispute? I argue that it's even less than that. Because for years, for example, I'll give one seat, for example, that it's in this column. Bill Nelson's seat in Florida. Dude, Bill Nelson has been in a close battle every fucking campaign to get that seat. And almost every time, he's pulled it out one way or another. The same fucking polling data every damn time. Before the primary, Nelson was behind. Ever since the primaries happened, Nelson's poll numbers have been ahead in every poll ever since then, okay, ahead of Rick Scott. And I think that there are other circumstances. The fact that the Florida governor's race, where Andrew Gillum is ahead of this Republican DeSantis, and ever since the primary happened, the Democrat has also taken a solid lead against him. It helps him, the fact that he's got a solid governor candidate together with him to make sure that that seat stays. I don't think, even though the margin on that poll is thin, I don't really think that that seat's up for grabs, okay? The other one that I don't think is up for grabs is West Virginia with Manchin, okay? I really think that no matter what the fuck the data shows, that guy has been there forever, and he's always brought the bacon back to his state. That guy's not going anywhere, okay?
Even if he ends up voting against Kavanaugh, which everybody says would really hurt him.
It doesn't matter. That guy is holding on to that DMC. Okay. All right. So I think that that one is also not in contention. So now you're down to only about 5 seats. Okay. So I do think that Heitkamp is going to lose that one. I mean, I think that she is. The polling data shows fucking North Dakota. They're just so deep red. It's such a small state. I don't think she's pulling that out. So I do think that the Democrats will lose that seat, okay? But that means that those three, so that's one Democratic loss, okay? But Arizona right now has that's going to be a pickup. That flake seat is going to go blue. I mean, it's a lean blue, but it's been consistent that way. So you take that seat, so you got one going over there. They're also, the polling data shows Nevada is also a seat that was been leaning blue. And Nevada as a state has been going blue on almost everything the last few years. Right. They've got the governor. They've got the other seat. They've got the state houses. I think that seat. So you've got 2 seats there that are going blue versus 1 loss on the other side. So how many seats am I down? So I got, well, I already went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that leaves 2 seats up for grabs, which is Missouri, which is McCaskill. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the polling data has shown the recent polls, slight lead, showing McCaskill still holding on. Okay?
Well, the RCP average has Hawley, the Republican, slightly ahead, but it's basically neck and neck.
It's neck and neck. Well, actually, the polling average has McCaskill ahead by about 1.1 point. It has the odds, basically. The odds are a toss-up.
Now,
just
to be clear,
56.6 versus 43.4.
538 does some various magic in their modeling.
Very
it's
funky,
a,
man.
It's
man.
Not a straight poll average. RCP is a straight poll right. average. The straight poll average, has Hawley slightly ahead, but very narrowly. I mean, 538 does a lot of cool things. I'm not disparaging their models. They take into account like the polling.
It's not a straight up average.
The history of different pollsters and what their bias and accuracy has been in the past. They take some fundamentals into account. They do a whole bunch of stuff, and it's all cool stuff. But it's not a straight average. Yeah,
it's not a straight average. So then we've got the other seat that's also a lean, which I think it's probably fucking Ted Cruz holds on. So Ted Cruz is probably going to keep Texas, okay?
Yeah.
So it's
going to be closer than he would like, but I think you're right. He'll probably have the advantage here.
He'll probably hold on. So
yeah, I mean,
that means, by the way,
RCP's average has Cruz ahead by 4.5 points right now.
Yeah, and 538 has him up by about 3.8, 4.9. So it's very similar. So you've got two pickups. So the thing is that two pickups versus one loss, I mean, the other seat that is pretty close is the Tennessee seat, but that looks like it's going to go Republican. So I think you're winding up with if you look at the numbers like right now, it's looking like really it's a one seat. You could wind up with a one seat pickup in the Senate, but that doesn't tip the Senate. It's one seat is not enough. You really need to.
You need to.
Once he gets you to
50-50 with Cruz, with Vice President Cruz, that would be different.
Oh God, Jesus.
Yeah, with Pence breaking the tie. So yeah, you need it. You need it. You need 2 seats. But
yeah, I mean, yeah. The seats that are the closest one. I mean, Heitkamp is in a heap of trouble. I mean, it's just unless
look the Senate was always a stretch, and that's why
Senate is always a stretch.
That's why it's only a 30% chance of or 25% chance, whatever it is today.
I mean, unless they're able to flip really like Tennessee or Texas, it's going to stay as it is. It's not North Dakota because it's done.
So the most likely outcome we end up with is, you know, and again with the everything could happen. Every possibility from the Democrats taking both houses to the Republicans keeping both houses to it being split in both directions are possible. But the most likely outcome is the Democrats take the House, the Republicans keep the Senate.
Yeah. It may be a narrower margin in the Senate, but it's I think that the Democrats have a good opportunity of really, in my estimate, of picking up one seat. But I don't see how they I really have a hard time of finding two. I mean, and I mean, Heitkamp is just so behind and freaking the one that could be the wild card is if Heitkamp is able to keep her seat. But I really
She's further behind at this point than Cruz is. Like, so
yeah,
the Cruz race is a lot closer. So it's more likely that Beto wins Texas than Heitkamp pulls it out.
I know. So that's really that. Although, I mean, there would be nothing more satisfying than seeing Cruz lose. I mean, because I would really, really love to see Cruz on stage having to accept his loss. But I don't think it's going to happen.
And then you could see him on Fox News for the rest of time.
Yes. Well, or CNN. I don't watch Fox. I don't watch either of them anyway, so I'll never fucking see him anyway. So what the hell matter?
Enough about the Senate. Anything else to say about the House? Well, actually, instead of going directly into the House, look, I think the 70-30 odds and the 30-70 odds actually sum things up pretty nicely. The question is, we've got 1 month left. What can change these things? Do you honestly believe that no matter what happens with Kavanaugh, it does not affect this? Because a lot of people are saying, basically, look.
I really think the attention span of this electorate, that since this thing is going to be over by this week, by next month, it'll feel like it was a year ago.
It probably will feel a year ago. Like the conventional wisdom is that if Kavanaugh gets on the Supreme Court, as we've said, we expect at this point as the most likely outcome, but although that's 80-20 as well, that's really still too close to call as well. But if Kavanaugh gets on the Supreme Court, Any Republican enthusiasm that was built up by look at how the Democrats are beating up Kavanaugh will dissipate because they won. But the Democrats will be really fucking mad.
They're going to be pissed because he won.
Especially Democratic women. And that would make a big difference potentially in a lot of races. Whereas if on the other hand, Kavanaugh is stopped, then the Democrats would be a little bit less, you know, they wouldn't be as mad about that particular thing, but the Republicans would be mad and therefore would be motivated. So basically, whoever loses in the Kavanaugh battle will be energized for the midterms.
Energize.
That energize sounded cool because there was some Skype interference while you said it.
Even better.
So I don't know. Like, I'm watching it day to day, but I mean, you know, fundamentally, you know, we've had, as you've said, like the if you look at the generic congressional, I want to say it's been mostly stable. It's had some significant dips here and there.
It's had some blips here and there, but it's around the same fucking band.
Well, I'm hesitant. The range over the course of the year has been from the Democrats leading by 4 points to the Democrats leading by 13.
We're right
three,
in the middle
3 points
of that.
At the bottom.
And right in the middle of that.
Yes, we are right in the middle of that at the moment.
That's what I'm saying. Right in the middle of it.
And see, the problem is, and the problem is, though, that given the structural situation in the House right now, which includes not just gerrymandering, but demographic sorting and a whole bunch of other stuff, the estimates are that the tipping point, like where Democrats would have to be in the national congressional popular vote to actually take over the House, is about 6 or 7%. You
right.
know?
And we're so, right at, we're and we're just right slightly at, above that number.
Right. So we'll have to watch over the next few weeks, but I don't actually feel like we're going to get much more certainty than we have today, like over the course of the next month. I think we are still going to be, you know, sitting up on election day, watching returns come in without having any degree of confidence one way or another about how this is going to go in either the House or the Senate.
I agree.
You know, it's going to be about 70-30 odds. Maybe it'll move to 75. Maybe it'll move to 65. But we'll be in that kind of ballpark where, you know, you could roll dice. And if you get a 1 or a 2, you get one result. And if you get 1 through 4, you get the other result.
Exactly.
You know, and I cannot emphasize enough, and part of what I'm figuring out for Election Graphs for 2020 is how to more clearly show the uncertainty, because that's what screws everybody up. And I'll admit, I was influenced by it in 2016 as well, too much emphasis on the center line, as opposed to understanding the range of variability on either sides.
Well, look, that is one of the reasons why I like what Nate Silver has been doing, because in large part, I don't know if you recall, he took a lot of heat like the couple of weeks before the last election because he said that his model found a lot more uncertainty on the result than people thought about the presidential election.
His
got tons of shit.
His results, he was about where these congressional results were right now. He was at about 70% chance for Clinton, which was lower
than other places had, like, was way lower than everybody else.
Some were. The median place, and I did some posts on this at the time where I actually listed out every single one I could find that gave odds. There were about 12 sites that gave odds that I could find. Maybe it was 15, somewhere around that.
And
the median was 14% chance for Donald Trump.
Yeah, and he was at a 30, and he was close to 30. He had like double the chance.
He by the time at the end, he was at like 25%. So he had more than everybody else. But like the range of people's odds that they were giving ran from less than 1% for Donald Trump to Nate Silver at 25-30%. But the median was around 14%. And as I've emphasized over and over and over again, so I apologize for repeating it, 14% is rolling a 1 on a 6-sided die, approximately. And it's not like that doesn't happen. And people interpreted those odds as he doesn't have a shot at all.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about. I never get a 1 when I roll a dice.
Never happens.
Never. I haven't rolled a dice in a long time
As I said on the show before the election, that's why I kept saying, you know, you can be shocked, but you shouldn't be surprised. It's a non-trivial chance of this happening, and it did happen. And I think that's exactly where we are with both the House and the Senate. You know, 70-30 odds are a toss-up. It could go either way, and you got to keep thinking about it that way, which means, by the way...
Well, look, it's not a... Listen. It's not a toss-up, okay? Look, if I have to put money... It's not
yes,
a toss-up.
Yes.
If I had to go put money on it, I would go right now. You ask me, look, you got to put $1,000 of your own money on this. I would very confidently put $1,000 on the Democrats taking the House, and I wouldn't be extremely concerned that I would lose my money. Okay, that I would think that there's a chance, but it's a relatively
30% chance.
You know, it's a 30% chance, but that's not that bad. I mean, I'll take
that's
I'll
pretty
take
bad.
A 70%
but okay.
chance. No, it's not. I think 7% chance on making, you know, if you're telling me I get, you know, triple my money for that, you know, I'll put the money on that. Sure. Why not?
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, my point is, of course, it's not even. It's not 50-50.
No.
It's 70-30. No. But 70-30, like the one of the things that 538 and several other of these sites have spent a lot of time talking about in the time since 2016 is how bad people are at interpreting statistics. And how if you tell them there's a 60% chance of this happening, like most people interpret that as if you said 80. And if you say a 70% chance, most people interpret that as if you'd said 100, you know, it's just because people are stupid.
Yeah. But remember last time we were saying a lot, but look guys, last time there were people saying there was a 1% chance of Trump winning 1%.
Well, that, yeah, but you're looking at the outlier, just like Nate Silver was an outlier. The median was 14%, but even 1%, you know, it's like, yes, that's fairly damn unlikely, but things that are a 1% chance of happening happen many times every fucking day, you know?
Anyway. All right. Okay. So we've beaten the numbers up enough.
Let's take a break. We will be back and we will talk about Fred Trump's empire and how it affects the current Trumps. Back after this.
AlexandTheWeb.com. Bang Alex and Dad. Gaming videos and more from Alex. Elementary school by day. YouTube by night. AlexandTheWeb.com. AlexandTheWeb is AlexandTheWeb, and .com is period and then com.
Okay, here we are. So, Yvonne, this article in the New York Times, for anybody who hasn't yet read it, it's titled Special Investigation, Trump Engaged in Suspect Tax Schemes as He Reaped Riches from His Father, published October 2nd, 2018, by David Barstow, Suzanne Craig, and Russ Bootner. And it is really, really, really long. But I must say it was worth the read. I sort of read it in like 5-minute chunks over the course of an entire day. Whenever I took a break between other things, I'd read for a few minutes and then I'd continue later. But it basically tells the story of the Trump family fortune as it was accrued by Donald Trump's father, Fred Trump, and then as it was distributed to his children, as Fred Trump got older and eventually died, and how throughout this whole time, first of all, that a lot more of Donald Trump's money came from Fred Trump than he has ever admitted.
Yes.
And this has been sort of known before. We've mentioned that this was probably the case, but this really outlines it in excruciating detail exactly how it worked. So, like, it basically,
in inflation adjusted dollars, it came out that he really received close to $400 million, I think it was.
I think it was over 400 actually.
For 400 million. Yeah, a little over 400 million. Yes.
But also, not so first, this punctures the bubble of Donald Trump's brand, of his story that he's told about himself, about the self-made billionaire and blah, 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 all this kind of stuff. But second, it appears that quite a lot of what they did to do this involved all kinds of schemes that were fraudulent, schemes that were tax avoidance of various sorts.
Right. Yeah. Yes. The two biggest of the things were setting up a sham corporation. The name of it was something... what the heck was it? It's some kind of like all county, like cleaning, something like that, supplies, in which basically it was used to launder tons of money that was being given as gifts and other things. It was used to disguise millions of dollars in gifts from their parents' records and interviews show. But the other part was the biggest part was the valuation that the real estate holdings of Fred Trump were given at the moment that they were transferred to him and his siblings, in which they undervalued them by somehow by over 90%. of what right. they were actually worth.
And by
so
the way,
that way they would avoid owing estate taxes on them.
And by the way, one of the things that they said in defense to this is, you know, the IRS checked this and we adjusted it, blah, blah, blah. Because the IRS did look at this and find, hey, this is a little bit suspicious. And they added some value here and said, okay, pay this much more. But they went from 5% of the true value to 10% of the true value or something like that. And so they still Correct. Left a lot on the table. Because the IRS, you know, when they go after these things, isn't all that super aggressive, apparently.
I mean, the thing is that, look, over the years, especially under Republican administrations, audit and enforcement of taxes has been curtailed substantially over the last 20 plus years. So their ability to really do.
And by the way, there was an article this week as well about exactly that, about how IRS enforcement is at an all-time low right now.
Yeah. And so that's a big part of the problem. I mean, in order to pursue a case like this and understand the problems with like valuations placed in these tax returns, if you don't have the manpower to be able to go out and review each one of those appraisals to make sure they are valid, then it becomes a problem. Especially because I think that they were getting people that they were paying to give these wildly deflated appraisals in order to justify the valuations that they were putting in for that. And look, I will tell you that especially the practice of appraisers, you know, it's one of the reasons that the financial crisis is so acute. I mean, appraisers would go out and basically do whatever the fuck, put whatever value the person that was doing the transaction would pay them for, because somebody was paying for the damn appraisal.
I'm getting my house appraised this weekend for a refinance. And so, you know, I should just hand them the number I want, right? That's how it works.
That's the way it used to work. I will tell you that before, you could just tell them whatever the fuck number you wanted on the damn thing and they would do so. I would say that right now. No, not anymore. they're really tight about that. But I can tell you that back then, I mean, you got the appraiser. I mean, you told the appraiser what value you were looking for. You're paying for the appraisal. It's most likely you were going to get that value in there.
It's ridiculous.
And so, yes. And so, you know, the fact that, oh, well, we provided documented the appraisals, whatever. They freaking like they were paying for the appraisals. They got whatever the hell damn value that they put on the damn fucking things.
It's important to say here, there was a lot of tax fraud in this history, but there were other types of fraud as well, where they were defrauding the people who were renting their properties. They were doing various things that screwed those people over in various ways. This was not as Ed Bruce and I had a discussion a number of weeks ago. These are not necessarily victimless crimes. There are people who are getting hurt by how they did this manipulation, not just
here,
the IRS.
And here it is. Right. So the most overt fraud was All County Building Supply and Maintenance, a company formed by the Trump family in 1992. All County's ostensible purpose was to be the purchasing agent for Fred Trump's buildings, buying everything from boilers to cleaning supplies. It did no such thing. Records and interviews show. Instead, All County siphoned millions of dollars from Fred Trump's empire by simply marking up purchases already made by his employees. Those millions, effectively untaxed gifts, then flowed to All County's owners, Donald Trump, his siblings, and a cousin. Fred Trump then used the padded All County receipts to justify bigger rent increases for thousands of tenants. You know, there you go.
There are a couple things here to note. First of all, is if you go through this history, the fact that the Trump family are a bunch of crooks is absolutely clear from beginning to end.
Yes.
You know, Fred Trump, starting in the 1940s, was doing shady shit, maybe even before,
yep.
You know, and once his kids got involved, they were involved, you know, and right. And as Fred Trump, you know, as in his twilight years, when the kids were doing more and more, they became very active, and the schemes that they come up with to avoid inheritance tax and all of this kind of stuff, you know, the Trumps will, of course, claim that, you know, they're just taking advantage of loopholes in the law. It doesn't appear to be that. It appears to be them very clearly structuring things in such a way as to as to hide things that they were overtly defrauding the government and others in all of these activities. It was also pointed out by a couple people that this article shows one thing very clearly, that there was one actual good business person in the Trump family, and it was Fred, not Donald. You know,
no, definitely.
Who actually, because one of the things that,
and that apparently that Fred kept having to bail out Donald
over
all
and
the
over
fucking
and
time.
Over again
and over again.
Yeah, yes. Because Fred actually built
sounds
a little.
Like, to be honest, it sounds like my. To be honest, it sounds like my dad with his parents. But anyway, all right.
You know, it was Fred actually built a real estate empire that was constantly bringing in income. It was actually profitable. Donald Trump kept sinking his money into crap that went bankrupt over and over again.
The Plaza, the Trump shuttle, the sales in Atlantic City. All of that shit, it was just fucking like sucking up money.
And Fred just kept giving him more and more money to bail him out every time it happened. And
so, by the way, today somebody pointed out that the reason why the New York Times found out
this is good.
About this whole Old County building and supply and maintenance thing was because Donald's sister, who's a federal judge, in one of her financial disclosures had to disclose that she was receiving substantial amount of money from all county building supply and maintenance.
And they're like,
and
what the hell
it
is
was
that?
Million. Where the hell is that? And that's how they wound up unraveling the whole damn sham with all county building and maintenance.
Right. Which, by the way, people have pointed out that she may be in just as much or more jeopardy than Donald is about all this stuff. Now, because all of this happened, the latest events that are outlined in this article happened in what, around 2000, mid 2005-ish, somewhere around there?
Mid-2000s, yeah.
Mid-2000s.
Yeah.
And so we're actually past the statute of limitations for criminal tax fraud. However, there is no statute of limitations on the civil portion of that. So the
penalties.
Both the state tax authorities and the IRS could potentially go back and reassess all this shit and come back and say, hey, you guys owe us this many million dollars. Pay up now.
Yeah. Oh, they could. Yes, they could.
And the New York authorities are already looking into it. And given what these transactions were, and that they were doing things like claiming 5% of the value of things, this is a not insubstantial chunk of change, plus, you know, 10 plus years of penalties and all this kind of stuff that would be added to it. Penalties, interest, all of that. So there could be real financial jeopardy here if these authorities decided to be really aggressive. Now, the IRS probably won't under, you know, given that Donald Trump is the president and can tell the IRS what to do. The New York State tax authorities might be aggressive, but they would have less of an impact, but it would still be potentially.
It's still substantial.
It's still substantial. Also, of course, if the Democrats do win the House, you can be damn sure they're going to have hearings on some of this stuff. But also, very significantly, I think, because most people have been talking about what's the potential liability for the stuff laid out in this article. Okay, fine. But also, there's no fucking indication that they would have changed their practices and saw all of a sudden gone straight to, in 2005.
Yeah, I don't think so.
You know they're doing this shit still to this very day.
Well, here's one thing that somebody has been questioning, right? Okay. If Fred Trump get bail, look, Donald got that last payment from the liquidation of Fred's assets, which is over $100 million. Which you know, Fred Trump didn't want them to do that, but they needed the money.
Right.
So he picked up that $100 million. So questions of, you know, somebody on Twitter was questioning, okay, so let me get this straight. Donald Trump has been doing business.
This is Fahrenhold from the Washington Post.
Right. He had been questioning. So let me get this straight. Donald kept being bailed out and got the last money from his dad in 2004. Who the fuck gave him all the money for all the all cash transactions that he did since 2004
right.
from since, you know,
since dad's money ran out.
There have been $400 million plus dollars on all cash, no loan real estate buys. He sunk $200 million plus in Turnberry alone, and it's still losing money. Who the fuck is paying for this? Where is this money coming from? I mean, this is a huge question, which, of course, we have no fucking answers to right now. And, you know, I don't know what the answer is.
It's kind of a question that we maybe should be looking into.
Yes, we should. Yes, we should.
Yeah, and so I said it was David Fahrenthold. It was a conversation between David Frum and David Fahrenthold that you're referring to on Twitter.
Yes.
So David Frum asked who's paying for it in response to something Fahrenthold had said, and Fahrenthold replied about that. And Fahrenthold was the guy who was, in the 2016 campaign, was looking into all kinds of details of the Trump Foundation and where their money was going. And also, you know, when Donald Trump promised to give money to veterans and he didn't actually do it and all of this kind of stuff. So Fahrenthold has been on the beat of digging into, you know, what Donald Trump is doing with his money.
All the fucking bullshit that, right. Exactly.
So we'll see. Anyway, I think there's a lot to see here. And one of the situations we've been in since Donald Trump became president is that aside from what the Mueller investigation has done, and for the most part, it seems like they've only looked at Trump finances in areas where they think it intersects with their mandate about looking into the Russia stuff.
Right.
So there hasn't been a really deep investigation into the Trump financial stuff. The Democrats might want to, but they're not going to. They can't do anything right now. The Republicans are in the Senate and the House and the committees that might care about this stuff are not going to go anywhere with it as long as the Republicans are in charge. If the Democrats win the House, you can be damn sure there are going to be committees spinning up all over the place that are doing things like subpoenaing his tax and business records, you know, and trying to figure out some of this shit. Because there's all kinds of suspicion that, you know, I mean, all these emolument cases and, you know, is he trying to make money off the presidency? What related to the Russia stuff? Is he getting payments from the Russians in one way, shape or form?
Russia, mob money. Where the fuck is this money coming from? Where? The banks haven't been giving him money. That's the fucking thing. He burned every bank. The banks didn't want to do fucking business with him. Where the fuck is he getting his goddamn money?
Well, Deutsche Bank was still giving him money, right?
Some money, but not a lot. But look, there was that listen.
And then Don Jr. explicitly said a couple years back in some interview that they were making a lot of money off the Russians. You know? So,
the Russians. Well, remember that crazy Palm Beach real estate transaction where he bought a house for $20 million, then some fucking Russian bought it for $100 million? He hadn't even done a goddamn thing to the fucking place.
Right.
I mean, all of a sudden he pocketed $80 million out of fucking nowhere.
There's all kinds of stuff that needs some detailed looking into that just does not smell right.
No, nothing. None of it.
And the history we see with this Fred Trump stuff and the taxes, I mean, it's just absolutely clear that there is zero concern for following the rules. And in fact, there's contempt for following the rules.
Yes.
Only suckers follow the rules. And if you come in with that attitude, you know you're breaking the law every other thing you do. It's just a matter of somebody has to go after you and find it. And they've been operating under the fairly good so far assumption that nobody's going to bother looking into it and going after them for it.
Right.
And frankly, if he hadn't run for president, they probably would have continued to not look into it.
Nobody would have. Exactly.
But because he's president, now everybody cares. And
now everybody fucking cares.
Now, having said that, it's a goddamn shame because you know he's not the only one, too. You know, and this points to, you were talking about how the IRS's enforcement capability is way down from what it used to be. The a couple shows ago with, I think, Ed and Bruce, I had mentioned how the FBI basically decimated its white collar crime division after 9/11 to put all the concentration on counterterrorism. So there's a big hole there as well. And so you get the feeling that this kind of white collar crime is actually rampant because nobody's policing it effectively anyway.
Yeah, I know.
And same thing when we were talking about Manafort and everything they've caught Manafort for, you know, there's been so many comments that if you held
that, if there wasn't a special prosecutor, they would never, never caught this asshole.
Well, true. But also that if you look at just the lobbyist scene in D.C., there are probably 100 people guilty of stuff just as bad as Manafort. You just have to go looking for them.
Yep.
And so, you know, I think if we ever get out of this morass, if, you know, there really needs to be an effort to say, hey, let's rebuild, you know, the capability of really going after this kind of criminal, because it's rampant and it's a problem. And no, it frankly isn't fair to just go after Donald Trump if all these other people are doing the same damn thing. Now, he's a good first target because he's the goddamn president. But, you know, if it really is true that the swamp in D.C. is full of people doing this crap, we need to go after him. We can't just ignore it. And I don't care if it's Democrats just as much as Republicans. People doing this kind of shit need to be gone after.
Well, I agree with you on that. I mean, I think that's one thing that I every time I hear the Republicans think, oh, yeah, we only want to go after Republicans. Fuck you. You know, you're a sexual assaulter. You're going down. I don't give a fuck what party you're going down to.
Well, yeah. And speaking of that, Keith Ellison should be the hell out of here. You know,
yeah.
I don't know for sure that he's guilty, same kind of thing, but there's enough circumstantial evidence there that he should be out of here too.
He should be like Franken, and he should resign, and he should be done. I agree.
Yeah. And Menendez probably should have been convicted in New Jersey and probably should be out as a senator too.
I agree with that too.
You know, like if you're a fucking asshole that's ripping off people and making money off your office and generally being corrupt, you should be out of there. I don't care if you're being corrupt in supportive positions. I agree with you. You need to be the hell out of there.
You need to be the fuck out of there.
Okay. On that note, I think we've done a show.
We've got a show.
So thank you, everybody, for joining us Thank you, everybody, for joining us for Curmudgeon's Corner again. And thank you, Ed, for offering to do the show from your hospital bed. That still sort of blows my mind. And get well soon. And for everybody else, you know how to find us. Facebook.com/Curmudgeon's Corner. If you want to tip us, Patreon.com/Curmudgeon's Corner. And through there, with an appropriate donation, you can get on our Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, which is lots of fun. You can find me on Twitter at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E. You can find Yvonne at I-M-B-O, I-M-B-O-U. And what else? Anything else to say? Did I forget anything? Anything important?
Feedback. Send us feedback.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of feedback.
Feedback@curmudgeons-corner.com. You can also leave feedback in all the other ways I just mentioned. And leave reviews. Leave reviews on iTunes. That helps us as well.
Reviews. Yes. Yes. Okay. 5-star, 1-star. We suck. Whatever. Sure. We'll take them all.
Just be creative. Like, you know, I appreciate just leaving a star rating, but what's really nice is when you leave a star rating and leave a creative, interesting review that when we read it will make us smile or laugh or whatever, you know, as long as it's creative and interesting. And, you know, don't just be mean. You know, that's no fun. But if you can be creative, that's cool.
I don't know. Actually, that could be funny depending on how mean they are.
Well, like, mean creative is okay.
Right.
But just like mean by itself is, you know, just mean.
I don't know. It would be interesting if somebody just went out there and just wrote just you and me should just go fuck ourselves or something. I'd find that that would be funny.
Okay. So yeah, just leave a review. We don't care what it is. There you go.
Yeah, apparently we don't really give a shit, whatever. Let me write something real. Whoa, you're not something. Somebody told me to go fuck myself. Yay!
And as Yvonne's Skype connection goes to hell, thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week. Have a great week. Take care of yourselves. Goodbye.
Bye.